Does it guarantee freedom or make it safe to discriminate? The battle over the Religious Freedom Reformation Act. The calls for more DCS funding. Senate leaders signal problems for a soccer stadium bill. And Justin Moed returns to the State House. That, State House security, the Rolling Stones, and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending March 20, 2015.
Programming is made possible by Ice Miller. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
AT&T, working to enhance connectivity in Indiana by investing in communication networks. Dedicated to helping Hoosier businesses grow and consumers succeed both at home and at work. AT&T. Rethink possible.
This week, a committee in the Indiana House voted 9-4 in favor of the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. On one side, conservatives and religious leaders looking to send a message
that religious freedom is very important to the people of Indiana.
This is about our lives.
On the other side, many of the same people who fought to legalize gay marriage, including Amy Sandler, who took part in the state's first gay marriage, authorized because her late partner, Nikki Quasney, was dying of cancer. She gave tearful testimony.
Please reject this mislabeled Religious Freedom Restoration Act.
The bill that has prompted some business owners to post anti-discrimination messages is also opposed by Eskenazi Health.
Our patients might believe that they could be denied care because of a staff member's religious belief about them or their families.
But supporters of the bill filled the hallway outside the chamber, and one of them, a pro-life activist, said it would protect a caterer who might be asked to supply food for a pro-choice reception.
For a pro-life business owner in the state of Indiana to do a catering business specifically for the purpose of raising funds to advance the killing of unborn children would be a direct violation of that business owner's faith.
Why is this bill so controversial? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Robert Vane, Leslie Weidenbender, editor at thestatehousefile.com, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV State House reporter Jim Shella. Ann Delaney, is this more about symbols than it is about reality?
No, it isn't. The same people that are supporting this also oppose gay marriage. All right. They say this isn't about discrimination.
You're talking about people outside the General Assembly.
No, even inside the General Assembly, okay? They say it's not about discrimination. They had an opportunity yesterday to make it clear that it wasn't about discrimination. They had an opportunity to say that sexual orientation is not a basis for denying, is a compelling, preventing discrimination based on sexual orientation is a compelling state reason for intervening. And they voted it down. Okay? So what this is about is, you know, some people have some religious concerns based on very small issues that have arisen. I mean, when Representative Westco was talking, what he wants is a church to be able to locate wherever it wants, whether it has parking or zoning or anything else. That's what that is all about from his point of view. But what it's really about is preventing, and I think that'll happen, preventing local ordinances that are in favor of allowing non-discrimination or preventing discrimination from controlling.
What it's really all about is telling the courts how to interpret cases, correct?
There is some ambiguity, and a lot of people have talked about that. Some of that stuff needs to be cleared up. It is not unheard of across the country to have people put out of business or be sued because they don't want to do a cake or take pictures at weddings, same-sex weddings, because their religious convictions don't foster that, don't believe in that. So in the sense that those things are happening across the country, not in every state, in some countries, that is completely and totally legitimate.
It is not happening across the country.
There's stories after stories about it happening.
Yeah, and they're made up in most cases.
They're made up by the news media, because that's where I'm reading them.
Leslie. That never happens?
I don't think it never happens, but it's like one swallow does not a summer make. You don't change the law because of one silly lawsuit brought. And nobody says whether anybody has ever recovered under that lawsuit either.
So the Amish shouldn't be exempted from the photo ID, the picture requirement, based on their religion. The government makes allowances all the time.
I am not saying that they shouldn't make allowances for religious reasons. I think they should. I think if you want to wear a hijab, you should. A yarmulke, you should. All of those things, I think, are legitimate. But if that was the only purpose of this bill, then they should have said that denying discrimination based on sexual orientation is a compelling state interest, and they didn't do that.
Leslie, would we be witnessing this debate if there hadn't been legalized gay marriage in Indiana?
No,
I don't think so, because, I mean, we weren't having the debate before, and we are having it now, and there are a number of states who had already had this debate. The Congress had already had this debate, and it had not made its way to Indiana, so I think there's no doubt about that. Having said that, I don't think that means that's all it's about. And I do think there are some interesting debates, some interesting arguments either way. Having said that, if they pass this, it's just going to open the door to more litigation, I think, not less.
And the argument in favor of it is that it would lead to less litigation.
So. And I think that it would not. The opposite would be true, because we've got a settled set of circumstances pretty much right now. And I think that's interesting. You know, Robert mentioned the exemptions that are made for the Amish who don't believe in having their photograph taken. And Ann mentioned several other exemptions. Those are already handled.
Right.
So the question then becomes, is the law really needed, or can you already take exemptions for sincerely held religious beliefs? And it seems like that was already the case and already is the case. So by passing this law, by definition, you're going to increase the amount of litigation.
Regardless, it comes up for a vote in the House as early as Monday, almost certain to pass.
Republicans have super majorities. I'm sure it's going to pass.
And the governor says he supports it.
Of course he does. I mean, he's appealing to the radical right. Of course he's going to support it.
But it's going to become law.
Yeah, it's going to become law. And it's going to give Indiana a black eye. The largest employers in the state all said they don't like this bill, that they think it sends the wrong message. Everybody keeps saying, well, other states passed it. That's true. But most of those states passed it well into the early 90s. The attitudes in this country have changed dramatically in the last 15 years. And what we're saying is, oh, they haven't changed here.
I think it's still an emotional issue.
It is an emotional issue. I don't think we should pass laws saying it's okay to discriminate. I'm sorry.
And Governor Pence has made it clear from the beginning. So if the voters didn't like his position on these things, they wouldn't have elected him, or we wouldn't have 500 Republicans in the State House and 9 Democrats. So to the extent that it's not popular, the voters will decide.
So if the voters want to discriminate, that's okay, huh? Is that the message?
But if you're appealing to the voters to make a change, I'm saying it's either too late or it didn't work.
Moving on. The governor reacted to an outside study this week. It found that despite the addition of over 100 people last year and more than 200 the year before, the Department of Child Services is still understaffed. It led Mike Pence to make a call for $15 million in new spending over the next 2 years to hire 100 additional caseworkers as well as 17 new supervisors. Here's the governor.
We want to make sure not only that we're meeting our statutory obligations in terms of the standards that have been set, but we just simply want to do right by our kids. We want to make sure that that we have the proper amount of personnel that can be both investigating and providing the appropriate accountability and supervision for vulnerable children in Indiana.
The department study confirms that those standards are valid, that we do need additional caseworkers and staff to come in compliance, and the plan now is to get that funding to make sure that that happens.
And that Senate Minority Leader Tim Lannon, who's been calling for more DCS funding for months, Robert Vane, will $15 million solve the problems at DCS?
What you see right there and what you heard is great leadership by Governor Pence. Just like when he stepped in to shorten the ICE step test, he steps in here and says, look, Let's take a hard look.
Didn't he have the same opportunity to do this last year?
2 years ago.
But he commissioned the study to make sure we actually needed the numbers and the investment. He's making that investment. 100 more caseworkers, more supervisors, more money. That's what you do when you identify a problem. And at the same time, it's also the benefit of having the surplus. When you need to make these investments because problems arise, you've got the money.
Yeah, after he asked him to revert money. You know what's amazing about this is it shows no leadership. He did the same thing in both instances. He commissioned an outside study, spent, in this particular case, $500,000, which could have hired another bunch of DCS employees to tell him exactly what anybody looking at this situation when he started in office could have told him. It's not simply that we don't have enough caseworkers. We don't pay them adequately, we don't train them adequately, and we overwork them. And then we wonder why we have a 40% turnover. It doesn't take rocket science. It doesn't take $500,000. It takes leadership, and we didn't see it from the governor.
Is this a case of slow to react or bold leadership?
Oh, I think it's a case of addressing an obvious need, and the sooner it can be addressed, the better. And I'll let, you know, however that's interpreted, be interpreted. It's needed, and it has to be done because there is nothing more important than ensuring the safety of kids who may find themselves in a situation where they're at danger. We, for too long, have talked about this problem and talked about it and had several attempts at making it better. And I think it gets down to the fact that Ann identified you have to hire people who are capable of doing these jobs. You have to pay them a salary that is worthy, that rises to the level of the worth of those jobs. And you have to give them the freedom to do the jobs that you've hired them to do. And so often the bureaucracy has crushed that. These reforms are made and then they fail. Let's hope that this one sticks.
Will there be any opposition to this?
No, absolutely not. And both parties have already come out and said they're in favor of it. And it is important for all the reasons that John said. But at some point, we also have to start talking about how we, what we do for these kids before they get to a situation where DCS needs to step in. I mean, it's very important to identify kids who need help and to provide that assistance or get them out of their homes, but we have a huge problem. I mean, one of the reasons that these caseloads were out of control was because the number of calls to the state's hotline have increased dramatically. I'm not sure, you're right, the state has been reverting money back. DCS has been reverting money back, but I'm not sure they could have kept up in terms of the amount of hiring they had to do anyway because of the way the caseload has exploded. And, you know, we have to intervene here at a point where we're keeping the caseload from getting high to begin with. We're talking about the back end here, and it's extremely important, but at some point we have to talk about the front end.
Let's move on. GOP leaders in the state Senate are coming up with their own plan for a soccer stadium in Indianapolis. The current bill calls for taxes generated by a new multi-use stadium to be captured to help pay for it. It also calls for using the taxes generated by a hotel project that is also owned by Indy 11 owner Ersol Ozdemir. Support for that plan was the motivation for a state house rally this week. But before the rally began, Senate GOP leader David Long indicated that the stadium bill is not a priority for him. Here's Long, followed by Mayor Greg Ballard.
We may come up with another idea that may be less expensive, but we may not.
We need to make sure that we are sending the right message to everybody across the country that Indianapolis still is a sports town and we understand what's happening into the future.
There's never guarantee. Our goal is to continue to show that there's support.
And that's Ersol Ozdemir. John Ketzenberger, we're now learning that Senator Brad Hirschman has a plan that calls for no new soccer stadium. It calls for spending $25 million in state and local money to rehabilitate Carroll Stadium at IUPUI. Is that a better idea?
Well, I'll tell you, it's the idea that's going to pass the Senate, and then it'll have to get worked out between the Senate and the House in conference committee. It seems like the fact that it's still alive is probably a good thing for the supporters of the stadium, because clearly Senator Long signaled that that wasn't a priority for he and his caucus, and if it's not a priority for them, then it could actually end up pretty dead. So this looks like they've got some possibility.
Yeah, he said they might not do anything, which is what they did last year when a stadium bill came over from the House. I think a key here for them is that if you rehabilitate Carroll Stadium, it will be state-owned.
Oh, yes, and you also have the opportunity then to Right now, that's a multi-purpose stadium, and you could keep it as a multi-purpose stadium rather than building something that's more specific for soccer. I know that there is talk about making sure that the soccer stadium does other things, but if the state owns it and there is more control there, and you can use it for more things, and then you'll also reap any of the benefits that come with it.
So the big question is, do the Indy 11 and the city of Indianapolis go along with this?
Well, you don't know yet because, I mean, to John's point, you don't know how it's going to look at when it comes through.
It's just being made public, yeah.
So this town, I mean, it's great to see all these wonderful Republican leaders, Mike Pence, Greg Ballard. It's a great day to see these guys stepping forward and making bold decisions.
Well, Greg Ballard's saying
don't
that...
Don't you represent them already, or are you still looking for business?
Greg Ballard says that a new stadium is critical.
Well, you know, all you got to do is take a look what's going to happen in about 2 weeks. This place is going to be flooded with people for the Final Four. You go back to the Super Bowl, the story about the Colts re-upping on season tickets, 95%. I didn't play soccer as a kid, but my kids who were 14 and 12, they played soccer. It's a huge stadium. The Indy 11 delivered last year. Whatever you say about the stadium, yeah. They delivered on their promises for an enthusiastic and have lots of people at the games. That's something to build on because let me tell you something. You can always argue that you can spend money on something else. And in 1981, 82, 83, they built that stadium, the RCA Dome, with no team. And look where we are now.
Yeah, but one reason why the Senate leaders don't like the new stadium idea is because they think Lucas Oil is too much of a sweetheart deal for the Colts.
And the other problem you have, you know, you drive on the roads and the streets in this city, and you drive on the highways of this state, and if you were in a third world country in the middle of a war, would be embarrassed about the state of the streets
Greg
of this
town. Spent $400 million
I don't care what he spent on it. I'm losing tires.
Of which you didn't support that deal.
Mike Pence spent hundreds of millions on
roads.
When you can't actually have infrastructure needs met, basic infrastructure needs met, that's the image this state presents. When you go on these, you've been on the neighborhood. You know how bad they are.
You think the interstates are a big...
It is a big problem. Yeah, I think the interstates are a
problem. You think the interstates and the roads in Warren Township are a bigger representation of what this state means than the Colts and the Final Four and the Super Bowl?
I think it means more to the quality of life of people who live in Indianapolis,
Well, then you ought to support Mike Pence. He's spending $400 million.
There was a call for $1 billion.
Is a drop in that bucket.
There was a call for $1 billion in new road funding this week, but now... Moving on, State Representative Justin Moed returned to the State House this week for the first time since he was the subject of a sexting scandal, and there was a mixed reaction to his return. While some fellow lawmakers reached out to show their support, four fellow Democrats stayed off the House floor to avoid being connected to the Moed story.
Does that give you some idea what kind of challenge you have here?
Well, over the past week, I've been very encouraged by all the calls, the emails from my colleagues on both sides of the aisle, encouraging me to come back and to get back to work.
Do you intend to run again?
That's a conversation for a long time from now. You know, right now, it was getting back to work, getting here today.
Leslie Weidenbender, is Moed handling this well?
Well, time will tell. We don't know what he's saying and doing privately. We know a little bit, maybe. But we don't
maybe too
know.
Much.
We don't know how he's handling this privately with his colleagues. His public persona has been good. His public appearances have been good. I thought he handled that very well. He had an apology immediately. He has continued to apologize. It feels like that there have been a number of lawmakers who have tried to be supportive of him. And so I actually think it's going as well for Justin Moed as it could possibly be going.
He has two bills that passed the House that are now over in the Senate. I think that the question of whether he's effective, whether he has a future in the legislature, may ride on the fate of those two bills. Is that fair?
No, I don't think so. I mean, the bills ought to ride on their merit.
Agreed.
And, you know, if the Senate deems them appropriate, then the Senate will act on them. If it doesn't, and it chooses not to do so because of problems that he's got in his personal life, I think that's a mistake, and I don't think that's fair for him or the issues that are affected by that legislation.
Think this story's over?
No, I don't think the story's over. I think he's handling it as well as you can under those circumstances, but he had no opposition in the primary and no opposition in the general election last time. I just don't see that happening again. So, but the way he's handling this now, it seems to me, bodes well for his ability to serve out his term, certainly.
Yeah, I think that's probably right. He has an ability to serve out his term. Running again is problematic.
I agree with that. I mean, as someone who consistently always, you know, makes the worst decision possible given a set of possible options, I feel sorry for him personally as someone who he clearly feels the embarrassment. I think he's handled it well, but I'd be shocked if someone doesn't run against him in a primary.
And use this for an issue.
And he can't complain if it's used for an issue. I mean, he's done what he has to do. I mean, those of us who work in PR,
you face... You an issue.
Yeah. Right.
With that Citizens United, you could have the citizens for a more moral legislature start.
But you have to face the fire, and sometimes the hottest fire comes from your colleagues.
He certainly is going to face an opponent. I mean, there's no doubt about that. But I live in his district, represent Moad's district. I have never lived in a district where a representative has worked harder to be out and in the neighborhood. It's going to be very interesting to see if he continues to do that and then how that plays out.
Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. Last week's question was, when should a public official's private life become public? 6% said never. 70% said only when he or she breaks the law. 24% said when it appears on the internet. This week's question, do you feel safe in the State House? Your choices are A, yes, B, no, or C, only after the General Assembly goes home. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to WFYI.org/IWIR and look for the poll. There are more state troopers patrolling the State House this week, and it's tougher to enter some entrances to the building. Security was increased at the request of leaders in the General Assembly who say it was not a reaction to protesters or a specific threat. Instead, they say it's a recognition of the world we currently live in. Officers are now posted at a number of entrances that previously were unmanned. Here's House Speaker Brian Bosma.
I think it was a realization that the State House was much less secure than virtually any other public building here locally.
And I think a level of security higher than what we had in the past is warranted. So that's why we did it.
And that Senate President Pro Tem David Long, Robert Bain, is the extra security necessary?
I think in a beautiful building like the State House, you want to try to protect it as much as possible. I've been in it quite a few times lately, and you don't feel like that's some sort of, you know, you're entering some sort of like bank vault sort of thing. And the security folks at the State House are wonderful, wonderful. They know all you're doing is trying to get in. They do their job, and then they let you move on.
We keep seeing increased security. It wasn't that long ago that you were free to come and go in that building.
Yeah, that's true. But it is a reflection, unfortunately, of the times that you used to be able to be free to come and go in the city county building,
yeah,
and the federal court, for that matter. So I think they were a little bit lax in the way of security. I think it's interesting that when they bring up issues like this is when they start to get nervous, you know. But I think it's long overdue that they've looked at that and made an assessment, not based on what the issue is, but what the risks are.
Yeah, I mean, the optics aren't good. On a week when you've got protesters there for various issues, all of a sudden you have, four troopers together patrolling the building.
Yeah, I mean, it is a little unnerving to see troopers come through and you see the bomb-sniffing dogs around, and it is unusual. You know, as somebody who spent a lot of time in that building, I like that it was an open and it's the people's house, but you want it to be secure. And as long as people can continue to come and go and you can have demonstrations and you can have the opportunity to express yourself and do it in a simple fashion, then that's good.
I think it's unfortunate. I think the security is good. There's no doubt. It was very easy to come and go without having to go through the security. So it's necessary. I do think it's unfortunate that at 5 o'clock the doors shut and there's no way for someone who doesn't have an access card to get in, no matter what, whether you're with someone with an access card.
And sometimes there are events in the legislature and the courts later, going on later.
And even if they're done technically, they're still in the building, and I think that's a problem to solve.
Well, they should obviously have the guards on later.
Right. Finally, the Rolling Stones will be coming to Indianapolis, I think. As of now, there's no confirmation of a concert date. But one of the most viewed billboards in the city displays messages about the band. The electronic sign at the state fairgrounds along Fall Creek keeps showing Rolling Stones lyrics and the word Thursday underneath them. Several days ago, rumors started after an internet claim surfaced saying the Stones will play the Indianapolis Motor Speedway this summer. IMS has not commented. And Delaney, does Mick Jagger do it for you?
No, but I went to his first concert here, and I'm going to go to his, hopefully, his second concert here. And after that, whatever nursing home he's in, I'm sure I'll be happy to visit.
That was at the Hoosier Dome, right?
Yeah, it was. Uh-huh. It was a good concert.
I was there.
Give me Zeppelin.
Let's see.
You can have them.
Sounds fun. That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Robert Vane, Leslie Weidenbender of the StateHouseFile.com, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity or Bright House Networks. I'm Jim Shella of Which TV. We'll see you again next week.
Programming is made possible by Ice Miller. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
AT&T, working to enhance connectivity in Indiana by investing in communication networks. Dedicated to helping Hoosier businesses grow and consumers succeed both at home and at work. AT&T, rethink possible.